This week on Vaticano, Pope Francis meets with Boko Haram survivors, raising awareness to the devastating reality so many women face in Nigeria. We sit down with Cardinal Mark Ouellette, outgoing prefect of the Dicastery for Bishops, who has led the Vatican's office that advises the Pope on the appointment of bishops. And for the first time in history, an entire family will be beatified. Discover the incredible story of the Ulma family, murdered by the Nazis. Vaticano starts now. Friday, March the 17th, in Rome's parish of Santa Maria delle Grazie al Trionfale, Pope Francis presided over a penitential liturgy, with which he opened the 10th edition of the Lenten Prayer and Reconciliation Initiative, known as 24 Hours for the Lord. Wanted by Pope Francis himself and promoted by the Dicastery for Evangelization, 24 Hours for the Lord takes place on the fourth Sunday of Lent, so-called Laetare Sunday. It's an initiative that's celebrated in dioceses throughout the world, with churches that remain open for an entire day, so as to offer the faithful and pilgrims the occasion to stop by at any moment for adoration and the opportunity to go to confession.
At that moment, when we realize that we are naked, he clothes us with the festal garment. That is, and that must be, the meaning of the sacrament of reconciliation. A festal encounter that heals the heart and leaves us with inner peace. Not a human tribunal to approach with dread, but a divine embrace in which to find consolation.
Pope Francis, in his homily, also addressed his brother confessors, asking them to forgive everything and to forgive always.
Per favore, fratelli, perdonate tutto. Perdonate sempre.
Please, brothers, forgive everything. Always forgive, without pressing too much on people's consciences. Let them speak about themselves and welcome them like Jesus, with the caress of your gaze, with silent understanding. Please, the sacrament of penance is not for torturing, but for giving peace.
After the exposition of the Most Blessed Sacrament, Pope Francis also confessed some penitents. And at the end of the rite of Eucharistic benediction, the Pope returned to the Vatican, while the other priests continued confessing the many faithful present. In 2021, the motu proprio Traditionis Custodes caused a sensation. With this personal letter, Pope Francis severely restricted the celebration of Holy Mass in the Tridentine Rite. Pope Benedict had reauthorized the traditional Latin Mass as an extraordinary form of the Roman Rite in 2007. However, with Traditionis Custodes, Francis had rescinded his predecessor's motu proprio and initially decreed that permission from a diocesan bishop was needed to celebrate Masses in the Tridentine Rite. On February the 21st, 2023, the Holy Father published a rescript.
Also, es ist nicht ein motu proprio, das hat nicht selber sich ausgedacht.
It is not a motu proprio, so the Pope did not come up with it himself, and it was not recommended to him to write it himself, but it was presented to him by the congregation, and he then signed it in the context of the audience. This rescript is about the fact that the application of Traditiones Custodes has obviously caused difficulties. Two points are mentioned. One is the celebration of the extraordinary form in parish churches, and then the question of allowing the use of the 1962 Missal by priests who are ordained after the entry into force of Traditiones Custodes. Traditiones Custodes was already very clear in that point, but in the case of parish churches, it was not. and as a result, some diocesan bishops probably gave dispensations and allowed masses in parish churches, which is against the text of Traditiones Custodes. And in this regard, it has now been clearly said, you cannot do that. Giving this permission is reserved for the Holy See and must therefore be applied for there.
Das ist dem Heiligen Stuhl vorbehalten und muss deshalb dort beantragt werden.
Prior to the publication of Traditionis Custodes, Francis had conducted a survey among bishops regarding the traditional Latin Mass. The results of this survey ultimately prompted the Pope to make today's restrictions.
Hello, and welcome to this week's Vaticano Updates, the most important news from Pope Francis and the Vatican. On Sunday, March 19th, two radical Israeli men entered the Church of Gethsemane in East Jerusalem, where the tomb of the Virgin Mary lies, and they physically attacked a bishop and two priests who were taking part in a religious service. Now, the men attempted to deface items in the church, but were later arrested. Patriarch Theophilus III of Jerusalem urges for better protection of Christians in the Holy Land and their holy places. On March 20th, 2003, the US carried out its first airstrikes in Iraq. This week marks the 20th anniversary of Operation Iraqi Freedom. The US military remained in Iraq for 8 years, during which some 4,600 US soldiers and 270,000 Iraqis were killed. Cardinal Fernando Filoni, the then Apostolic Nuncio to the nation, who was sent by Pope St. John Paul II, said Pope Francis's visit to Iraq in March of 2021 was much more than a simple visit. It was a pilgrimage to Iraq, not only for the holy sites of Abraham, but also a pilgrimage for the many martyrs, both inside and outside the church. Pope Francis will appear on Disney Plus on Wednesday, April 5th, during Holy Week. In this special, the Holy Father will meet with 10 young people from around the world and dialogue with them on a variety of issues, from sexuality to abortion, immigration, and the loss of faith. The Holy See reported that the Vatican's diplomatic headquarters in Nicaragua was forced to close. They said, yesterday, March 17, the chargé d'affaires of the Apostolic Nunciatura in Nicaragua, Monsignor Marcel Diouf, he left the country for Costa Rica. The closure of the diplomatic headquarters of the Holy See occurred as a result of a request from the Nicaraguan government on March 10th, Vatican News reported. On March 25th, the Church remembers the one-year anniversary of Pope Francis, united to all the bishops and Catholic faithful around the world, leading the worldwide consecration of Russia and Ukraine. Now, at the time, referring to the ongoing Russian invasion of Ukraine, Pope Francis said that today is a day in which the world knocks on the door of the Immaculate Heart of Mary to renew to her the consecration of the Church and the whole of humanity, and to consecrate to her in a particular way the Ukrainian people and the Russian people who, with filial affection, venerate her as a mother. Thank you for watching this week's Vaticano Updates. My name is Benjamin Crockett for EWTN Vaticano.
In a few moments, we'll be back with more on Vaticano.
The most dangerous country for Christians in the world.
Nigeria, known as the Giant of Africa, is the continent's biggest economy and largest democracy, with a population projected to become the world's third largest by 2050. It's also the world's largest mixed Muslim-Christian nation.
In Nigeria, we have, as a population, 210 million people. And I want to be precise. Almost the 50% are Christians. And so Christians are Nigeria. Christians aren't, yes.
A vibrant Nigeria could serve as a growth engine for the whole continent. A failed one would be a source of instability and violence. Nigeria has been in the news lately because of the recent elections. The country is at an inflection point, with over 60% of the population living in poverty, while security crises, including kidnapping and terrorism, have multiplied. Bola Tinubu, a political kingmaker, was declared the winner of the presidential election after a tight race marred by accusations of vote rigging and the lowest turnout ever recorded. One of the issues that weighed heavily during the elections was Boko Haram, a terrorist group responsible for the deaths of more than 75,000 Nigerians.
In the 2022, in Nigeria, 28 priests were kidnapped, and three of them were killed. And so it's unacceptable, the silence of the Western countries.
Which means Western education is forbidden, seeks to overthrow the current Nigerian government and replace it with a regime based on Islamic law. The group has repeatedly targeted secular schools, including the kidnapping of over 200 schoolgirls in 2014. Francis recently met two victims of Boko Haram, 19-year-old Maria Joseph and 22-year-old Janeda Marcus, on March the 8th at his Wednesday general audience. Maria Joseph and Janeda Marcus were invited to Italy on behalf of Aid to the Church in Need, a pontifical foundation which supports Christian victims around the world. They hosted an encounter for the media with Janeda and Maria called Listen Also to Their Cries, aimed at bringing attention to the suffering, persecution, and violence that many women face around the world. Janeda and Maria both suffered greatly at the hands of Boko Haram. Witnessing the killing of family, Janeda saw her father beheaded in front of her, killed because he refused to have sex with his daughter. Maria spent 9 years as a captive of the terror group. She saw her brother cut to pieces, while her sister is still in captivity. The importance of their faith during their period of captivity was instrumental in keeping them alive. This was something that was echoed in both testimonies. Janeda Marcus spoke about the importance of her mother praying for her during her period of captivity.
My faith, that time when that happened, like me, I even tell my mother that let us join them. But my mother didn't allow us to do. She used to pray every time for us. When we come out and I see that all the things that they are telling us is no good. Always their thing is like they turn it off. They will tell you to be a Christian is a bad thing. Their own is a good one.
They were accompanied on their journey by Father Joseph Fidelis, a priest of the Diocese of Maiduguri in Borno State, Nigeria. Father Joseph is a trained psychologist and heads the Diocesan Trauma Center, where both women received psychological care to aid in their recovery.
I have seen so much suffering in their faces and experienced so much that they have gone through. Sometimes I feel devastated. All I do is go back to my small chapel and pray. But when I meet some suffering higher than my own, I say, Lord, help me. How do I help these people?
But there is hope for the girls. Janeda Marcus is back living at home with her mother and siblings, studying tropical medicine. Maria Joseph is in school, learning to read and write.
My people who suffer need someone to go alongside with them. And I think the Lord is there, even in our suffering, even more in our suffering, because He's always on the side of the marginalized, the afflicted, and the suffering.
As Janeda and Maria head back to Nigeria, we keep them and all female victims of violence in our prayers.
Some days ago in Nigeria, there has been an election, and we want to hope and we are praying about a change in the direction of the political approach, hoping in a guarantee of the safety for our brothers in the faith, because otherwise it's very difficult for them to remain there.
Cardinal Marc Ouellet, outgoing prefect of the Dicastery for Bishops, has led the Vatican's office that advises the Pope on the appointment of bishops for over a dozen years. The 78-year-old cardinal has also served under three popes. Cardinal Ouellet spoke to EWTN Vatican Bureau Chief Andreas Thonhauser and Catholic News Agency's senior Rome correspondent Hannah Brockhaus.
Speaking of different contexts, you have experience both here in the Vatican, but also back in North America and as well in South America, firsthand experience there.
Yes.
How would you describe, let's say, the transatlantic relationships between bishops in those continents and the Vatican?
Yeah, it is an interesting question. I start with Latin America, if you allow me, because we've been working with the CELAM, the Conference of Bishops of Latin America. That is a long history. And so they've been working very well in the direction of the Holy Father from 2007, the last big meeting of the bishops. And so the Evangelii Gaudium, the program of Pope Francis, was taken practically from this document and improved and completed. The Pope said that several times. So there was a sort of affinity that is normal. With the episcopate in North America, Canada and United States, So the relationships are more complex, I would say. In 2018, it was a tough year for me in particular, because we had the big crisis of abuse, and they had to reshape their normativity and so on. I've seen the bishops acting quite well with the Christian heart, you know, of compassion for those people who are dying on the road, you know. And so other matters were maybe more complex because we know that society in America is very divided, politically divided, and it has an impact, obviously, on the church and on the bishops.
Maybe we stay a little bit on the issue of Latin America, because of course you also serve on the Pontifical Commission for Latin America.
Yes.
And you have great insights there. We have a Latin American Pope as well.
Yes.
How would you say has that impacted also our church in general?
Thank you for the question. You know, the continent where the gap and the divide between rich and poor is greater is Latin America. And so the Pope has come to the See of Peter with the poor in his heart. And he has put the poor at the center of the church. This is a contribution of Latin America and a response and a call to mission. I say that because if the Pope brings the poor at the center of the church, that means it is a provocation for our charity, our solidarity, our compassion, our social doctrine to transform the economy of the world so that it could serve the poor and not just enrich the rich.
Thank you so much, Your Eminence, for your time with us.
Good, thank you.
Thank you very much.
We'll be back after a short break with more on Vaticano. For the first time in the history of the church, an entire family will be beatified. It's the Polish Ulma family, also known as the Samaritans of Markowa.
At dawn, towards 4 o'clock in the morning on March 24, 1944, here in Markowa, at the Ulma family's home of Josef and Victoria and their seven children, among whom one still in the mother's womb. German soldiers arrived with a very precise objective. They wanted to severely punish the entire Ulma family, because according to the law of the German occupiers, they had broken the law according to which any help of the Jews was strictly prohibited.
Vietava in qualsiasi modo aiutare gli ebrei.
They earned this name as they were moved by the commandment to love and by the example of the Good Samaritan. They were murdered by the Nazi regime for giving refuge to eight Jews during the Second World War. In 1942, the Germans killed the majority of the Jewish inhabitants of Markowa, a Polish city on the border of modern-day Ukraine. Many Polish families made the heroic decision to hide Jews in their homes. One of these was the Ulma family.
The Ulma family in the second half of 1942 hid eight Jews persecuted by the German occupation for around a year and a half. They welcomed these Jews in the name of love of neighbor, that which is required by the gospel.
Especially in the Polish territory during the Second World War, a law was in vigor that in different ways punished any Pole's gesture of help towards the Jews. And this law became even stricter after the famous conference held in Berlin in January of 1942, when the authorities of the German regime met to define a so-called final solution to the Jewish question.
All of it had a very precise objective, the need to eliminate all of the Jews present on the European continent. And according to this law of the German occupation here in Poland, any act of assistance, even if a Pole knew where a Jew was hidden and didn't inform the German occupiers,
anche lui poteva essere ucciso.
It was probably a local policeman who informed the German forces that the Ulmas were hiding Jews. And on March the 24th, 1944, the Germans entered the Ulma farm. First, the eight Jews were shot. Then the couple, Joseph and Victoria, with their six children, in addition to the seventh, who was in the mother's womb.
L'aspetto più originale.
The most original element of this beatification of the entire Ulma family consists of precisely the beatification of an unborn child, not only naturally, but also not spiritually born through baptism, the sacrament of baptism. The church, especially with this decision, vile occore, shakes our consciences, reminding us of the sacredness of every human life that begins at the moment of conception and up to natural death. So it's a great reconfirmation. It's a great hymn to the holiness and the dignity of every human life.
È un grande inno della santità e della dignità di ogni vita umana.
In 1995, the Ulma family was added to the list of righteous among the nations at Yad Vashem, the Holocaust memorial in Israel, together with 6,000 other Poles.
With this concept of proclaiming the entire family blessed, the parents with seven children, among which also one in the maternal womb, the church wishes to most of all confirm. It wishes to emphasize the beauty and importance of matrimony and family life.
20 years after the beatification began, on September the 10th, 2023 at Markowa, the beatification of the entire Ulma family will take place.